Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, February the 7th, 2019. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And we've been holding the space for both Michelle and Dr. Tim for things that they're going through. So if either of them are on and wants to give us an update, that would be awesome. And we continue to hold the space for you. Welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hey there, sweetie. Thank you. Welcome, everybody. Our apologies for our new co-host not being with us the last few days. Ari Rain, it turns out, that Dad and Mom's days off ended up coinciding with the days we usually have her. So she's been MIA, but she will be back with us tomorrow. So we certainly do appreciate the sweetness of the energy that she adds to our show and to our lives. And today, I think we'd like to, first of all, let's just put out again that holding the space for Dr. Tim. Found out that he has a bone broken in his leg that's been broken for some time and he's been living with it. So, Tim, we certainly hold the space and support that moving through quickly and easily. A non-union fracture can be a challenge. So see that bone just coming together, knitting itself well, easily, and you being able to dance again. Get on your bike and ride. And Michelle, if you're with us, we'd love to hear how your day went yesterday, if you were successful in holding that space of love that you were working on. And, of course, Doug and Suzanne, Susan, we hope that Doug's surgery was easy and successful and out the other side, and the distress and strain for you, Susan, was easy. I know that you did a lot of work as a result of this whole event, and so I'm sure your energy field has made an upgrade and it's moving forward and living as the presence of love. We're here to hold the support for that. And today I thought we'd talk about the communication process. And we have a tool called responsibility communication. And, you know, there are two places people can come from. They can come from a reaction. How did you redo an act done on a previous occasion? Or you can respond. And when one takes conscious awareness of their response, then they have the ability to respond, to communicate back again from a space of conscious, active, present love. In the meantime, the average person's mind wants to enter into problem solving. Gee, this situation makes me mad, sad, afraid, stresses me, overwhelms me, overloads me, and people live in the game that game of denial that something outside of them could possibly cause something to happen inside of them, which is absolutely ludicrous. And so most people simply make the request. No, don't ask me to look at what's going on inside of me. Don't ask me to be responsible for what's going on in my mind. Keep my diseases hidden from myself, in effect, is what people are saying. Just solve this problem for me. Just fix that so that I don't have to deal with it. And then, see, everything will be okay for me. The fallacy of that kind of thinking is, if there's a situation in your life that can bring something up for you that's less than love, that situation is a gift that gives you the opportunity to work through whatever it is that's going on in your world. And in fact, the reason why those things show up is because we need their gift. And they will tend to keep showing up. If nobody's noticed, life is relentless. If you've got something in you that's less than love, life is going to show it to you over and over and over. And the reason for that is, and probably the biggest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages, is that we have had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. You and I are creative beings. And being creators, we create results. And we create results out of the energies that we hold. If we hold an energy of trauma, literally, energy by definition is motion, and everything that creates motion creates an energy wave. And everything that creates an energy wave communicates to all the world what that energy wave is about. And this is law called the law of resonance. And the law of resonance, simply stated, says this. When two energy fields are in tune or in harmony with each other, there's an exchange of information between them. If I hit a middle C tuning fork on a desk, put it near a second middle C tuning fork, that second middle C tuning fork begins to move, begins to vibrate. It takes the energy that's radiating from the first tuning fork, absorbs it, and that absorption of energy creates motion in the second tuning fork. So resonance creates motion. You know, if I have two baby grand pianos and I open the back on one of those pianos and somebody goes over to the second piano and hits a middle C, if the top is open on that second piano and I observe carefully, I will see that the only strings moving, of the hundreds of strings in that piano, the only strings moving are going to be the ones associated with the middle C that is resonating in response to the field put off by the motion of striking the keys, causing the strings to move. The strings set up a frequency. If there are, and I don't know how many strings in a piano are associated with a middle C, let's say it's six out of, I don't know, there are a couple hundred strings in a baby grand piano, I think. I don't know exactly. I'm not a piano tuner or anything, but something in that range. So if these six are moving in this baby grand, and I give them a good punch, I really pound those keys, literally, transmutation of energy. Remember, one of the key laws of the universe is the perpetual transmutation of radiant energy. I absorbed energy from the sun. I absorbed energy from the air I breathed. I absorbed energy from the food I ate, and I'm able to put that into motion. I'm able to transmute that energy into motion of my hands. I hit a middle C. Not pretending I know how to hit a middle C because I don't play the piano, but let's imagine that it. That transmutation, that energy from the sun, the minerals in the food I eat, the energy absorbed from the food that I eat, the air that I breathe, is transmuted into motion in my fingers. I hit the piano keys. There's a striker that hits the strings. The strings begin to vibrate. Anything that vibrates, anything that moves, sets up an energy wave. So each of those strings puts out a literal energy field. Now it's invisible. You could look in that piano. You could look for the next 100 years and you won't see an energy wave. But the second middle C piano does, or the strings that are associated with the second middle C, and they start to vibrate. So there is motion created. In the human realm, there's another attribute that's added. And that is resonance creates motion toward. You know, with the two baby grand pianos, one isn't getting up and go over and crawl up on top of the other piano. But in the human realm, if you put out a field guess who's going to show up in your world? It's going to be someone who's in resonance with that energy you hold. And so if your unresolved pain or trauma, i.e. literally your dis-ease, because when you hold a trauma energy in a cell, the cell is diseased. It is going to start to come apart, and that's going to look like some sort of physical disorder. Ultimately, the only cause of death is holding frequencies within us that don't belong there. I set up a field. So if my unresolved trauma is, oh, I always get hurt in relationships, then I'm continuously, by the motion of that energy in me. Now, if I can let that go and forget about it for a while, that the amplitude of that energy lowers, and it's not as strong a field, so it doesn't tend to attract as much attention. But if I happen to resonate that, I'm sending out a signal that says, hey, world, I'm supposed to be hurt in relationships. Is there anybody in Dodge that knows how to hurt me? Somebody's going to show up, and they're going to play out whatever the behavior, the specific, precise behavior needed to show you you're hurt, they will play out. You will do one of two things. You will either go, oh, my goodness, there's hurt in me. I think I need to forgive this energy in me that's moving in response to what you've done. Or you're going to live in denial and say, look at this, you hurt me, and you're going to react out of those old brain cells and do the act done on a previous occasion. The other option is you can step into responsibility communication. You can own what moves in you. And as you own what moves in you, you have the opportunity to remove that which is moving in you. Now remember, if you live in denial, you made me mad, you made me sad. Our definition of denial, if I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, then I obviously, because the human mind is an evidential device, I have to hide the evidence that would show me that what's moving in me is mine. So now cause is hidden. We call that dissociation. Once I dissociate from something, it is no longer mine to change. Until I engage in forgiveness and reopen that part of my mind, reopen what I'm hiding from myself, take responsibility for it, and move it out. The objective of responsibility communication is to do that. And so instead of problem solving, why don't you just stop doing that or you fix that? When someone shows up and resonates something that's painful in me, how do I tell if somebody's resonated something that's painful to me? I'll be feeling pain. Well, yeah, but you see, I'm only feeling it because of what you did. Liar, liar, pants on fire. No, you're feeling it because it's what's within you. When you own what's within you, when you allow yourself to bring that forward, then you can remove that from your structure. And as you remove those things from your structure, you get to live in a different world. You get to live in a world where everything changes. And as those things change, healing occurs. And so that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to open the space to realize that our own internal dynamics are the only thing that can cause us pain, and that we always have the option of changing our internal dynamics. When we choose to shift those things, then we literally shift the energy that's in our cell, out of the cell, that's called forgiveness. And at the same time, we get to increase the ability that the kinds of interaction I want to have with someone are going to be what happens with that person. Interesting, there's a quote that comes from the Book of Thomas. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And here's what the Book of Thomas says. It says, if you bring forth that which is within you, then that which is within you will be your salvation. Of course, salvation not being the joke salvation that people have made up out of their easy theologies where they're going to be saved by some magical person somewhere, but literally being removed from the root of your pain or your trauma. And it goes on to say, if you do not bring forth that which is within you, then that which is within you will destroy you. Carl Jung adds an interesting piece to that when he says, until the unconscious becomes conscious, it will direct our lives and we will call it fate. If you've been calling all the terrible things that have happened in your life fate, then notice that you're hiding from yourself something that you need to be able to own if you ever want to heal it and move through it. So the steps in learning responsibility communication, as opposed to the alternative, which is projection communication. Projection communication, the act of taking something that's inside of you and pretending that it comes from the outside. That's right in alignment with our definition of denial. Then you start to shift your words. And you realize that words instruct the mind how to structure your reality. Your words instruct your mind to show you only evidence that's in alignment with those words. So when you realize that, you realize that the only thing that your mind ever does is it shows you evidence. It's an evidential device. And we've got that Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. When you realize you're looking at 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells moving, you realize you're looking at evidence. And the only thing you ever get to see is evidence of your own BS. Now, of course, BS is a belief system. Somebody might have a different reality for those initials, which is a perfect illustration of my point. Maybe when I said BS, you heard something other than belief system, which was my intended meaning. Your mind shows you the evidence that you have around certain frequencies. My mind shows me the evidence I have around certain frequencies. And so literally my words tell my mind how to construct the world that I see. So words are key in this process. The first step in responsibility communication is to make a commitment. And our definition of communication in this work is the use of some mode of interaction, usually words, allow me to transfer the reality, the picture, the world I've got going on between my ears intact into your mind. If I can do that, I will have communicated. When you realize that as a definition of communication, you realize that very rarely do people ever actually communicate or use words to communicate. Most people use words to win, to abuse, to get what they want, to overpower people. They don't use words for communication. There would be so much less stress and trauma in the world if people could just own the realities that are in their minds and be willing to show those realities to other people, to actually communicate. Now, if we were to define a word tool of communication, and of course, when one's using words, tools of communication, it's indicative of an interaction between two or more people. In this case, I'm one party in it, and you as an audience are the other. So I'm using words. Now, if that's a reasonable and accurate definition, which I propose that it is, that words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two or more, I'm going to invite you to step back from your own mind for a moment right now and notice that there are words running in your head. And notice those words are not being communicated to anyone else. If words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, then the question becomes, who's in there with you? Who's telling you the meaning of everything that you see? Our offering is that everything in your past is continuously telling you the meaning of the world that you think you're looking at. And in fact, instructing your mind to structure your perception to see the world in accord with the words that you hold and the experiences that you've had, whether they're accurate experiences or not. So the first step in the communication process is to make a commitment to communicate about whatever the situation is. And of course, we're going to use this tool in particular, ultimately use it in every event or circumstance. You'll find this so beneficial that you'll tend to use this as a mode of interacting with others continuously. But initially, people are going to start to use these tools in situations where there's some sort of conflict going on. So I'm going to make a commitment, and the reason for that, in essence, what you're doing here is you're setting a goal. And goals drive perception. Perception drives behavior. So you're making a commitment to do a certain behavior, to communicate. And remember that this means, I'm going to use words to transfer and or maybe other mechanisms, but in this case words, as a mechanism for transferring understanding of the reality that's in my mind intact into your mind. And I'm going to be responsible for that reality. When I make that commitment, my mind is going to tend to move in that direction if I have the brain cells for doing that. If I don't, then the rest of this sheet is about building those brain cells. So my commitment is to communicate about this situation. And then there's an invitation. And the invitation is to recognize that I have an issue going on for me that I would like your help in processing. So I have an issue inside of me that I'd like your help in processing. Now, be careful about defaulting to the old way of using words to get what you want, because the tendency can be to just slide back into the old behavior, and instead of using words to communicate about an issue that you haven't worked through it, words are used to tell somebody else how it's all their fault that I'm feeling this, and you better straighten up your act, you better problem solve. So I have an issue, I'd like your help in processing. And then if feeling disconnected, afraid, sad, what have you, acknowledge that feeling and reconnect. And this can be a place, you know, if you're really feeling disconnected from someone, to literally physically reach out, join hands, and connect. And you'll have taken a huge step toward actually communicating. Now, if anyone has ever had a circumstance where maybe you had a big row with somebody, and a week or a month or 6 months later, you found out that each of you was talking about a totally different situation or circumstance, and that the conflict happened because you thought you were talking about one thing and they thought you were talking about. You ever had that happen? So this second step in the communication process is a step you use to identify the event that you're dealing with. not your perception of it, but just the event. And you want to make sure that you include yourself in the event. So you make it a what we call a we event. So I'm going to describe the event in a way that includes my awareness that I'm involved in it. Oftentimes people will step into, they'll start out, you know, I have an issue and I'm committed to communicating. And then they'll start talking about, and when you did this and when you did that, and then you did this and you did that, and you were this way and you did that. And they're not even involved in it. Like, you know, they're somewhere off in space. It's going to be kind of hard to convince somebody that you really want to do responsibility communication when your whole conversation is about them. So you want to make sure that you involve yourself in the description of the event. And then, in this step, you're going to use what is objectively observable. You're going to describe the mechanical facts of the situation, and by so doing, you're going to make sure, you're going to take responsibility for making sure you're both talking about the same event. And here you describe only what a camera could take a picture of and what a tape recorder can record. Single frame of a camera, what can a tape recorder record? So it's the mechanical facts of the event. Now, in the workshop, if you order the communication CDs or DVD, I use an example. I've usually got a whiteboard and I've got an eraser. And so I'll set up a scenario and use that as an event to demonstrate this particular step in the communication process. And so I'll set up the scenario, you know, you're sitting at home, you've gotten home from work early, and you're sitting in the front room quietly reading a book. And here I am, I'm 3 hours late getting home from work, and there's been no communication. And so come in the front door again. You're sitting reading a book. I come in the front door, and I act this out when I play it out in the workshop, and I kind of stomp across the room, and I take the chalkboard eraser in my hand, and I throw it at the board, good hard slap against the board, put my hand in my pocket, and turn away. I say, now, okay, everybody in the audience, if you would, what just happened? If you were going to do this second step in the communication process, what are the objectable, observable facts of the situation? And most people will describe it as, well, you came in the room and you were angry. You threw that eraser across the board and had a scowl on your face. Like, can a camera take a picture of a scowl or anger? No, not in a million years. Single frame of a camera, can't do it. Well, I can tell when somebody's looking angry. Can you tell whether they were angry or maybe they just finished running the Boston Marathon? Can you really tell? No, you can't. And that's usually the extent of the description that I get when I use that example. And I've just finished saying make it a we event, include yourself, but because most people have issues around anger, and this looks to them like anger, it resonates brain cells of anger and resonates unconsciousness, they totally forget. In fact, I think over the years I've maybe had two occasions, and I've done this demonstration, God, I don't know how many hundred times. I think I've only had two times when somebody in the audience responded, included themselves in the description. So a description, the mechanical facts, identifying the circumstance, that's the only objective in step two, so that we're both talking about the same thing, would sound like from the person sitting in the room was, well, you know, I was sitting in the front room reading a book. You came in the room. I saw you, you know, your feet hitting fairly heavily on the floor. Tape recorder could record that. And you had an eraser in your pocket. You threw the eraser at the board, you put your hand in your pocket, and turned away. They're the mechanical facts. Now, for the person who insists, well, yeah, but obviously you were angry. Well, Are you sure of that? What if I shared with you that, you know, I was going to surprise you. That's why I didn't call you. I went out tonight after work, and I went to try out for a play, and I think I've got the lead role in the play. And tomorrow night I get to try out and see if I'm going to get the lead role. And I've got to, you know, look like I'm really angry and throw something across the room. And I didn't even realize you were there in the front room. I thought I was by myself, and I was just kind of practicing. What happens to your thesis that I was angry? Here I am delightfully practicing, trying out for a play. So at this step, it's the mechanical facts. Include yourself in the description. Otherwise, nobody's going to believe that you have any interest in responsibility communication if you talk about all the things they did. And so that's step two, the mechanical facts. And, you know, when you do this step, if your partner becomes defensive, you probably have not really remained objective, but you've started to put your reality, what was going on in your mind, into your words in a way that blame them for it, attempts to make them responsible for it. So that's step two, and I think we're about halfway through the show, so I'm going to clip our communication about the communication process to that, and we'll pick that up tomorrow. And in the meantime, we'll open for questions on the responsibility communication process or on anything else we've done over the years, anything else we've taught, any of the tools. Forgiveness process, we did the healing through relationships worksheet, we did the reality management. So questions, thoughts, answers, ideas is what I would like to entertain. And let's check Jeannie. Is Dr. Tim with us today?
He is not. And okay. Nobody has a hand up, and the comment in the chat room is someone said, "My words are my spells. Do I cast them wisely? For the universe is always listening and takes everything I say literally, literally."
Good one. Good point. Yeah. Yeah. When you look at that word spelling, you know, what is spelling? It's words do actually put people into a spell. They can create a trance unless you're conscious. And this is about conscious communication. This is about waking up from the spells we have locked ourselves into. You go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago. And he tells us that the power of life and death is in our words. And most people have been put into a spell of death. You'll notice when I talk about Ari Rain, you know, in our culture, we'd say she's X number of weeks old. You'll notice when I've introduced her and spoken about her, I don't talk about her, and I refrain from talking about her as being old. Why would I want to brainwash this precious being into aging and old? Why would I want to do that? So she's been, you know, breathing air on her own for the last 5 months. She's been circling the sun for 5 months now. And I get to start to undo the spelling. Remember when we talked about the physiological effects of emotional suppression? We quoted from the research, or did I quote that? There's an interesting piece of research was done at a place called the DeCourcy Clinic in Cincinnati, and this is a piece of information I probably got about 40 years ago, and I heard it once, and it was burned into my brain. I mean, it's always been with me, that quote. It was a medical doctor speaking, and he was speaking about at an aging conference and speaking about this research that was done into aging, and here's what the DeCourcy Clinic said. He said, "Time is not toxic. Time has no effect on human tissue under any conditions. It is a belief in the effects of time by those who subscribe to such a belief that acts as a poison." Now, you can know that, but that doesn't necessarily, until you engage in the forgiveness, undo the spell of, well, how old is she? How many times have you heard people say, "How old are you?" And you say, "I'm X years old." What's the spelling? Why are we being spelled with these ideas? And forgiveness is about undoing the spells we've been put under. So, Dr. Tim, we just hold the space for you. Whatever's happening in your world, I know you were talking about getting some treatment done with this broken tibia, and we just surround it in light and love and see this being able to connect and repair itself, and you being able to dance soon. Beyond that, how can we support you? What's on your mind? If you're out there in listener land, if you're in the chat room, of course you can write to Jeannie in the chat room, or if you're not registered with Blog Talk, you really can't write in the chat room. And you can do a very quick registration process with them. So you can write in the chat room, or you're welcome to call in. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you dial that number, you'll be listening to the show. If you push 1, through the magic of technology, a little hand goes up in Jeannie's control panel, and she knows that you want to speak to us. And so, how can we support you? What's on your mind? Push 1. Let's have a conversation. What is on your mind? How can we support you? What questions? What's going on? What are you processing in your world? What are your questions about the responsibility communication process? With the opening presentation, with a half-hour conversation, if I had been in your local town doing a workshop, Jeannie and I were there and doing a series, and your local community center or library or university or jail or church, if I walked down off of the platform after presenting what I'd presented, I know that virtually every one of you, with the amount of information I presented, I know that had to trigger some questions and thoughts for you. And virtually everybody in the audience right now would have been walking over to me, or maybe been shy and not walked over, but you'd have a question. You'd say, Michael, I just have a quick question. So ask your quick question. That's what we're here for. And the reason we ask that is because, as Jeannie says at the beginning of the show, asking the questions makes it your show. You get to direct where we're going to go with the information. But beyond that, it's the questioning ability of each person that sets the direction for the information that's going to come forward. And it's really the questions that are important, more important than the answers. And it's, I am so blessed by all of the people as we do this work. I've been doing this work over the last half century. How many people show up with their own refined questioning ability, and they open an area that I've never thought about. And when I take and apply the principles of this work to that area, it just opens up a whole other arena for me. And so you get to do that for everyone in the audience. So often I'll hear back from somebody, you know, there's been a caller that's called in with an issue or a question, and I'll hear from someone who's listening to the show, and their response is, wow, did that ever hit a home run for me? It opened up an area that really was powerful for someone else. So if you push 1, we'll be having a conversation, and I would love to have a conversation with you. Any thoughts for you, Jeannie? Anything going on from your end?
Michelle's got her hand up. Let's see what she's
doing. Well, let's say hello
how
to the
she's
young
doing.
Lady.
Hey, Michelle. How are you, girl?
Hi. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael.
Hey, young lady. Welcome.
Thank you for the, thanks for the invitation to speak. Well, let's see. I want to organize my thoughts. I'm driving back to work, so I apologize for any road noise. I called in on Monday. Okay, so on the day, the Tuesday, Tim's group, they had an ice storm, so they Zoomed it. And I went and participated. It was great to see some old friends from previous intensives. And we spent some time processing my challenges with staying in line with love and wanting to successfully have justice. So it was really helpful. It was a really poignant reminder of the synergy with the group process. There were some new friends that I met who made some comments. This one guy had a previous experience of losing a lot of money, and he, you know, we were all focused on court and how I was going to handle it and how to best strategize staying aligned. And he's like, you know, that's all great. He goes, but let's go with you lose. He goes, you know, this is the work that's going to carry you through, you know, the rest of your life. And it really realized that, you know, if I lose, I can imagine myself being bitter and perseverating about it for a decade or so. And so that, like,
right,
just struck a chord so important in me and motivating, because I realized, you know, the reliving the tragedy over and over and over, the suffering is not required. And so it was just helpful, you know, when you're in the middle of the muddle, to have all these different
right
brains coming at it. And Buffy knew me, you know, for a couple weeks at Oak Island, so she was able
sure
to add a level of insight because she knows my
nice
stuff. So it was a really good experience. And I want to make a comment to the chat room person, because this came up on Tuesday as well, about the spell and the words. Because actually, Dr. Rice, I secured this private practice with this group of doctors during an intensive in 2013, you know, near the beginning of my doing the work. And I was
right
very excited and happy about it. And, you know, it didn't really turn out the way that I would have hoped. I guess I'm kind of lost my train of thought, but I'm watching traffic. Sorry.
Okay. Well,
anyway,
well,
I'm back on. That I, you know, was so happy about the job and the opportunity and a new opportunity, and I got there, everything was great, and I loved it so much. I remember very often saying, I love my job so much, I would do it for free.
Oh.
And it was kind of like a gratitude thing, because I thought that was true. And I was so overwhelmed with the fulfillment coming to work every day was for me once I had more tools to work with clients. And it was so great.
Be careful what you ask for, eh?
So after court, it didn't go that well. You know, it all is in the swing right now. They just need a majority. There's 3 people sits on the panel, so I'll know in a month. Meanwhile,
right,
called Attorney General. Did you hear me?
I did. I got it.
Yeah, so
I think I made that suggestion about a year and a half ago when you told me about it.
Yeah, okay, you did. You enlightened me on that one. I really wasn't aware of their scope. So there's just some things that have come up that
right
has me now, you know, focus in a new direction. But so the whole process, I think the last couple of days, is as messy as it's been, I have definitely shifted. And I reached out to Tim because I wondered if he recorded some of our support group, because it really made a difference. And I want to ride the wave to have joy
nice
in the middle of, you know, some crap.
Right. Well,
so that's,
you know,
it. Thank you.
That's the act of bringing our human lives to events that happen in our lives. And the events do not have to interrupt or interfere with our experience of being human beings, which is being the active presence of love. And we've been taught to create this false self that lives and dies, loves or hates, suffers or has ecstasy over events, when those events cause none of that. It's the content of our minds that cause all of that. And that our natural state is a state of connectedness and love. And when we bring that state to the events in our lives, it transforms everything, changes everything. So nice work. Sounds like you've made another giant leap forward in your process. Awesome.
I did. Now, here's another quick piece of evidence. I wasn't feeling well on Monday. I went to bed early. I woke up on Tuesday and went to my purse for my wallet, and it wasn't there. And I know specifically I hadn't left the house. We were having the same kind of ice weather. And so I realized I left my wallet at the restaurant. Went in directly to talk to the manager and talk to people. No sign of it. So all my credit cards, all my debit cards, all my gift cards that I keep in there, $200 plus the cash, just, you know, the whole thing. And I'm very tickled that I'm so okay with it. Because that is something that would just send me into a level of upset, just feeling so victimized, you know, by the boy who took it or whatever. So I was like, that was...
Nice work. And on the practical side, for anybody who hasn't done a significant amount of this work yet, the chances of you retrieving the property that you left behind... Somebody didn't take it. You left it behind from the sound of it, and therefore maybe somebody picked it up, but notice perception came in with who took it. But the outcome of receiving your property back is going to be, your chances of getting that outcome are going to be a whole lot better than if you're in the victim mode and it's gone and who took it and I'm angry and I'm sad and oh, you know, blah, 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 loss and all of that. The chances of you actually getting your property back are a whole lot better when you stand as a space of love and send out the message to all the universe, including the person who maybe ended up with it, or maybe it's sitting under a table still in the restaurant. The chance of it coming back to you are a whole lot better when you're sending out the signal that, okay, and if I've lost it, I hope that it's a blessing to whoever ended up with it.
Yes, that's where I've landed.
You're going to benefit from
that. We actually talked about this on Tuesday because during the course of discussion about me being aligned for love, it came up, does that change the outcome? And there was a lot of back and forth on that. So I think that's maybe when Tim's back online, we could talk about that as a group because it wasn't so certain that that was going to be a way to impact it. Or that you can't impact it from that. I mean, I guess, you know, there's different ways to look at that.
Well, I think there's only one way to look at it from the perspective of truth, and that is the energy I'm setting up as a creator is going to tend to produce a result. If I set up from victimhood, I'll tend to produce a result consistent with victimhood. If I set it up from the point of view of a creator and, oh, I left my property behind, somebody's got it, hope they enjoy it or return it to me, literally sends out a different creative wave and will absolutely, if there's a possibility of a different result happening, tend to draw that result rather than reinforce the negative result. So my take would be absolutely, it impacts the output. And the reason to recognize that is because it changes everything. And I'll just say this from the point of view of personal experience and from the point of view of watching hundreds of people as they work through issues and literally situations and circumstances in their lives that were tragic, literally turn around 180 degrees. Maybe not the way they expected it to, but the result is monumental in terms of creating differently.
You know, you're right, and I've had the same experience. I know what you're talking about. I'm going to re-listen to the recording and see, because I can't remember what the dialogue was, but it was, you know, not kind of, maybe it's canceling the goal that that's going to happen.
Well, that would be another piece of the forgiveness process for sure. But I suspect you've heard me in a workshop, or you maybe listened to the CDs or the DVDs.
Is that doing the right thing for the wrong reason?
No, that wouldn't tie into the right thing for the wrong reason for me.
You know, I want to see.
I think I can do. I can do things from point of view that are on target with right action. And still have my mind nagging me about, well, this might be, I'm going to be doing this out of selfishness.
Okay.
The wrong reason, the quote-unquote wrong reason can still be there, but that doesn't mean that I don't step forward and do the right action. And I work with my own mind if it comes up with, you know, a selfish reason or whatever for doing a certain thing. But you perhaps listened to, or I've shared with you, you've been in one of the workshops where I've talked about, when I first started doing this work, you know, before I stepped into doing this work full time. I was in the business world. I had 3 businesses. I had 60 employees. You know, I had a Marksman on one side of my driveway. I had an Eldorado on the other side of my driveway. I had a penthouse apartment in one city and homes in 2 other cities. And I turned over a lot of money. Never made much, but I turned over a lot of money. And there came a point after about 6 years of doing this work where my guidance was to walk away from the business world, go back to school, and start teaching this work full time, which is what I did. And for about 6 years, I starved. When my kids were small, there were times when I didn't know how I was going to feed them tomorrow or pay the rent. And I can remember literally the second that that changed and all of the outcomes in that arena turned around. Literally. And what I had to process, what I had to deal with was I'd been brought up in an environment where I was told, well, if you do that spiritual work, you have to live in poverty. And that's what I held as true. And for the first 6 or so years of doing this work, I lived in poverty. I had rented a house in North Georgia and working on writing my book shortly after my daughter was born. And we moved up there in August. My daughter was born in May. And on December 24th, the house that I rented, the pipes froze. It had been newly built and hadn't insulated properly. Christmas Eve, the pipes froze. And I had a friend in South Florida who'd been wanting me to come down to South Florida, wanting me to come down. We couldn't live in the house. It was going to take 10 days to get the pipes fixed. So I called him and said, hey, you know, we just had pipes freeze, and you've been wanting us to come down and do some workshops down there. So that was before I did a whole lot of travel. So I drove down, and this friend lived in North Palm Beach, and he knew a minister at Unity in Lake Worth. I had done workshops at Unity in Atlanta at that time, but I wasn't traveling at that time. But Unity of Lake Worth, fellow named Larry Kendrick, and he explained who I was. He said, hey, you know, this fellow's coming down. Can we use the church to do a workshop? And Larry Kendrick said, well, you know, we're in Lake Worth, Florida. People don't come to workshops here. You're wasting your time, but sure, you can use it. Well, a week, 10 days later, we had over 100 people show up to a workshop. That opened the space. The minister at Unity in Fort Lauderdale that week had open heart surgery, and his wife was trying to run the church on her own. She was not a minister, was trying to run the church. So Larry Kendrick said, why don't you go down and talk to Faye Heinekamp and see if she could use some help? Obviously, there's something in what you're doing, because 100 people show up, and 100 people never show up. 10 people never show up at our church for a workshop. So I spoke to Faye Heinekamp, and she said, well, yeah, why don't you come down? We have a Wednesday night class we do. Why don't you take the class and do it? So I did it Wednesday night. And out of that, she asked me to do a six-week series. The six-week series, she asked me to give her titles so they could do publicity, and I did this six-week series. The last workshop was, the title of the workshop was, Still Waiting for Your Ship to Come In. Which one did you send out? I was in, you know, I had about an hour and a half drive from North Palm Beach to go down to Fort Lauderdale to do that workshop. I'm driving down I-95, and I've got literally about $102 in my pocket. Tomorrow, I'm supposed to load the car, two kids in the car, drive back to North Georgia, put food in the fridge, and be back in North Georgia. I'm driving down I-95, and I'm you know, kind of preparing in my head what I'm going to say in this workshop, Still Waiting for Your Ship to Come In, which one did you send out? And I realized I've been sending out the ship of, I have to starve to do spiritual work. I was on I-95 at Hillsborough Boulevard, and the guidance came to get off the highway, go get a $100 bill. I have about $102 in my pocket. Stop at a bank, get a $100 bill, and at the workshop, give that $100 bill away tonight. And I said to that guidance system, are you crazy? What, you want me to do what? Get off the highway, get a $100 bill, and give it away tonight. I got off the highway. I got a $100 bill. I did the workshop. I created an exercise where I said, you know, we talked about the scriptural idea of giving. What are you willing to give, and what are you willing to get back? They say 10 times, 100 times, yeah, 1,000-fold you're going to get back.
What do you want? Everybody says, I want $1 million. Okay, $1 million. So if you're going to get back 1,000-fold, get $1,000 out of your pocket and give it away. Well, let's not take it that far. Okay, what are you willing to give away? So I invited people to either write a check to cash or take cash out of their pocket, wad it up in their hand, and get up and walk around the room, and on signal, we just say exchange. And some whatever you had in your left hand, you gave to the person in front of you, and they gave you what was in their hand. And then you walked around the room. We did that exchange 3 or 4 times. Whatever you ended up with, you ended up with. I put out a $100 bill. There was a woman there that put out a $100 bill. The most, the high energy part of the evening was the argument with the two people who got the $100 bills who wanted to give them back. How do we receive? It's like, no, the exercise is whatever you end up with is yours. You got that $100 bill. Well, no, I can't. No, that's yours. I can't take that. How do we receive? And so we completed the exercise. No, that $100 is yours. I got a $20 bill. Drove back up to North Palm Beach and borrowed some money from the people I was staying, the fellow that I was staying with, to be able to go back and put food in the fridge, drive back to North Georgia. The car is loaded. We put the kids in the car. I put the key in the ignition. And for the first time in about 60,000 miles, the car won't start. Nothing happens when I turn the key. Now, this fellow is standing there protesting, Michael, you've just gotten things started. You can't leave. You need to stay here. You need to make this your base. It's like, Sam, no, I can't do that. I got to go back to the car. Literally, it doesn't even click like a, you know, a dead battery clicks, nothing. Took the key out of the ignition and said, okay, I'll stay. Unloaded the car. Called Faye Heinekamp, said, hey, I'm here. She had been asking me to continue working with her. I called her and said, okay, I'm here to do that. And the next week, now I got a $20 bill out of giving away my $100. The next week, I had a full-time practice in South Florida with having spoken at Larry Kendrick's Unity Church at the Unity in Fort Lauderdale, and I was also introduced to Unity in Delray Beach. I started to present in those three places, and I literally had a full-time practice the next week, and I made 3 times what I had made in any week that I'd been doing this work for the previous 6 years, and it's never fallen below that since. When you change your mind energy, your creation changes. Absolutely, you change what happens in your world. And I've watched that happen with 1,000 people. So that would be my take on what happens from my experience and the experience of just watching others. When you really handle the root of what's the issue you have. Now, I'd worked on this money issue for the 6 years I'd been doing this work and starving. And it was that moment where that shift occurred on the highway, driving down 995. So you never know when you're going to shift the route. You know, we can do a lot of surface work, but and that's where Yeshua says, how many worksheets am I going to do? 77 times 70 until I get to the core energetic pattern with which I create my life. And the instant that I change that, I change every response of everything around me. So that would be my explanation of the principle, and as a perfect question, thank you for presenting it and bringing it forward. Hopefully that hits a home run.
Yeah, you know, I've heard the story before, but you were telling it with a lot more passion today.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it sounded different. It sounded just more intense. No, not intense. It just richer. I don't know, deeper. I don't something.
Cool.
Michelle,
I don't know. You were in a sensitive point. Ready for it.
Michelle, I don't know if you are the guest that's in the chat room, but I also put it in the notes for today that you can access the archives of Tim's support groups, and I put the link to that archive.
And we're down to the last 10 seconds. Okay. The phone is going to cut us off. Everybody have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.